Are you searching for an education that forms not just the mind, but the soul? At Thomas More College of Liberal Arts, we believe learning should be more than just getting a degree. It should be about discovering truth, beauty, and virtue. Located in the beautiful and historic Merrimack Valley, Thomas More College is a Catholic liberal arts college dedicated to the great books and the pursuit of wisdom. But here students don't just study philosophy, theology, literature, history and classical languages. They engage in lively discussions in small, close-knit classes, guided by devoted professors. And they don't just learn about faith, they live it. Through a vibrant Catholic community, daily mass, and a curriculum rooted in the teachings of the Church. Every student at Thomas More College also spends a full semester in Rome, at no extra cost beyond tuition. In the heart of Christendom, they walk the same streets as saints and scholars, study in the shadow of St. Peter's Basilica, and experience Catholic culture in a way that no textbook ever could. If you, or someone you know, is looking for an education that challenges the intellect and nourishes the soul, visit thomasmorecollege.edu to learn more. Thomas More College. Experience more. Welcome to Merely Catholic with me, Gavin Ashenden. Domenico Bartolucci entered seminary in Florence in the 1930s, but was spotted as a really rather wonderful singer. He became a musician, first of all director of the chapel of the Duomo in Florence, and then at the end of 1942 he went to Rome to develop his grasp of sacred music, and finally was appointed deputy master and then master of the music of the Sistine Chapel. He wrote this: "Those who love liturgy with all their heart, with all their soul, they love and they desire beauty and holiness for the rites, which give glory to God and pour out effectively on the souls of the faithful, nourishing their faith, devotion and emotion." When he got to the Sistine Chapel, it was one of those times when the choir was in a bad way. But through his gifts and also the personal interest of Pope John the 23rd, both the choir and the music and the liturgy were renewed and restored and reached fresh heights of beauty and of excellence. Bertolucci was very much against abandoning Latin in the wake of the Second Vatican Council, committing himself to the idea liturgical for reform should not in any way become hostile to sacred music. He was made a cardinal in 2010 and he died in 2013, but his influence and his memory remain enormously powerful. Our guest today is Alessandro Bicciotti, who is director of what became the Bertolucci Foundation, set up to honour and continue Domenico Bertolucci's work and inspiration. All this is done in part through the work of a choir that grew out of the Sistine Chapel Choir called Sacred Voices, which, as it happens, is going on tour to New York in August. We're joined by Alessandro Bicciotti and also by Justin Kurian. Justin is organising the tour on the American side on behalf of a group called Reclaiming Christendom. Their aim is to re-evangelise Western culture through art, thought and beauty. Justin's also attorney and a novelist of some distinction. Together, they join me in order to discuss the work of the Sistine Chapel Choir, Sacred Voices and the art of singing the liturgy. Welcome both to Alessandro and to Justin. It's a delight to have you here. Alessandro, you are administrator in charge of the Bertolucci Foundation and the Sacred Voices Choir, which are having a tour in New York in 2025. Justin, you're the man in New York who's organizing it. You're a lawyer and a world-famous novelist, and you also run your own organization, which we'll discuss in a moment, that uses an umbrella for the whole event. Alessandro, you began your life by singing in the Sistine Chapel choir, which has connections with sacred voices, but is a different choir. How old were you when you started singing there? And can you describe a little bit of your life in the Sistine Chapel choir?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me. And it's a great pleasure to share my experience. So I started very young as a choir boy in that choir, the Sistine Chapel. And I started when I was 8. And then the first years were years of practice and some musical studies before you could join the real choir and perform in the most beautiful places. Because, you know, as you know, the Sistine Chapel choir is responsible for the music of the Pope. So basically, the primary goal of the institution is to sing during the Masses, which are presided over by the Holy Father in the Basilica of St. Peter's. But also, we were involved in an intense activity of concerts in the world. So at the time, the maestro of the Sistine Chapel Choir was Domenico Bartolucci, and with him, we toured the world. We were a couple of times in the U.S., one time in Japan, so many times in Europe. So you can imagine, for young choir boys, it's an amazing experience because you are part of a very specific and particular world, and you find yourself there singing in Latin in front of the Holy Father during the Masses. So I can say that it was one of the most important experiences of my life, also in terms of my personal faith, growing as a Catholic. So right now I treasure memorable memories and experiences of those years of my life. And probably this is why I continued my life close to Domenico Bartolucci. And now I have the great privilege and honor to run the foundation, which is named after Maestro and Eminence Cardinal Domenico Bartolucci.
I'll ask you about the foundation in a moment, but did you come from a musical family? How does an 8-year-old boy in Rome suddenly end up singing in the Sistine Chapel choir? I mean, you hardly had much time to prove yourself before 8. How did you find yourself beginning at such a young age?
So, yeah, this is a personal experience and a good question, because originally it began because my mother was not able to sing. So she said, I want my kids to be very able and professional in singing. And so before me, my older brother was part of the choir. He is 4 years older than me. So after him, I saw this, the older brother singing for the Pope and singing in the choir internationally and in the U.S. and in Europe. So I said to myself, okay, so you have to follow your brother. And so I went there for an audition, and they said, okay, your voice is fine too. So come and join us for tuition and practice. And then I also became a soloist with Domenico Bartolucci. So I was there singing as a soloist under the vault of St. Peter's Basilica. So you can really imagine, I want to really transmit the feelings and the positive feelings that a young boy could have being there and being in such a prestigious place.
But you were a star. This is incredible. So young. So does your brother, your mother must have been incredibly proud of you. And clearly all good Italian boys need a mother like that. So does your brother continue to sing professionally? Do you? I understand now you're an administrator, and I'll ask you about that. But have you lost the bug for singing? Do you still sing?
No, we didn't continue, because after you change your voice, when you are a boy, then you change your voice. At a certain point, you are out of the choir, unfortunately, so with a lot of cries. But after that, unless you start you want to have a career as a tenor or a bass, you have to start studying again. So it wasn't the decision of my brother and of me. But I was very, very happy about that, the memories of the Sistine Chapel, that I was close to Domenico Bartolucci and I became his personal secretary when I was still studying at the university. So it was a positive coincidence that I would be close to Maestro Bartolucci, and then he wanted me to be his personal secretary. And then, you know, when he was very old, he became a cardinal. So an incredible story, close to this man, who was the musician of 6 popes. So he spent his entire life there. And so I could treasure and I could witness the experiences that he had with many popes, and in particular with Pope Benedict, the last one, who made him a cardinal when he was 93. So I was there at that time, and I shared the life and the mission of Maestro until his last days, because he passed away then.
This is a fantastic story. I mean, like you, I was a chorister from the age of eight. And of course, for boys, the moment your voice breaks or slips, and depending how it happens, as an evolution or a catastrophe. And you're right, some boys, having had a beautiful soprano or a beautiful treble voice, then their grown-up voice isn't of the same quality. Some are. And it's really very difficult if you've been a star and you've been had a beautiful treble voice to then accommodate yourself to a masculine grown-up voice which isn't of the same quality. So it's incredible you were able to continue your association through being so close to Bartolozzi.
Yeah, and not from the from not as a singer but as an organizer. So yes. In 2003. He wanted to create an entity who could preserve his legacy, his artistic legacy, and that's why we decided to create this foundation, and I took care of the foundation since the beginning. So we also created a new choir in 2004, which is basically Sacred Voices. So the first years, we had the chance to be under the direction of Domenico Bartolozzi himself. And so my entire life was close to this man. So right now, we can still spread his works internationally, and this is a very good privilege. And we are very excited to let America know more about his life and his works.
So I'm just learning as we go, too. So is it fair to say that the Bartolozzi directing the Sistine Chapel Choir then made his own choir as a parallel choir, so that outside both the privileges and the constraints of the Sistine Chapel, and then presumably, since he knew the talent of the Sistine Chapel, did he poach from one choir to another? How many people in Sacred Voices have sung in the Sistine Chapel Choir?
Yeah, so basically when he turned 80, he basically retired. So, but it was still strong, and yes. He conducted the choir over 90 years old. So he was very, very, very strong man. So he decided to create his own choir, the choir of the Cardinal Bartolozzi Foundation, which is Sacred Voices. And in this choir, we have gathered most of the singers that were part that studied with him, either as a tenor or bass, either or as a choir boys.
Right.
So I could say that right now we don't sing with kids. We have women as for soprano and contralto. So it's a mixed choir, adult choir. But I can say that in the adult section of the tenor and bass, most of them were choir boys in the Sistine Chapel Choir or still are part of this choir. So for example, just to give you the most important one is the director. Adriano Caroletti is the director, and he was a choir boy. He went to the Sistine Chapel Choir with my brother, the same age, and then he continued studying singing, and he was taken in the choir. So he's right now a tenor of the Sistine Chapel, and at the same time, he's the conductor of Sacred Voices. So you see, there is a connection, and there is also the tradition that is passed from one generation to another, so in continuity with the legacy that we received from Domenico Bartolozzi.
It's very important. My voice was trained by a singer at the Royal Academy of London, and his teacher was Tito Gobbi. So he takes the style of Tito Gobbi and ideally passes it on to his own pupils, though in my case, I'm not entirely sure it was successful. But nice to have him as a kind of singing grandfather. And so, as you quite rightly say, Signor Bartolozzi has his own style, his own technique, his own sound, and has produced a whole choir out of his experience. I'm going to ask you a question that choir geeks are interested in. It's a bit old-fashioned now, but when I was growing up, there was a big argument in cathedrals about the difference between treble voices and soprano voices. And those people who said boys bring a very distinctive and different sound were considered old-fashioned and old fogies. but there was also a question of theology, which at least in Anglicanism was never taken very seriously. What was the consensus in Italy between the difference between a choir which has treble voices and women's voices? I know there's a whole range of opinions, and it's a very hot potato for some, but I wonder what your opinion was.
Yeah, so we can certainly say that these are two very different kind of choirs. But there is one problem, because when you want to recruit kids, it's not so easy today. So first of all, we have some choirs here in Italy and linked to the most important cathedrals, and they still have choir boys, but it's not so common. And that's why we have to find a solution. And so that's why we basically need women who can sing as soprano and contralto. And so you can have a very complete polyphonic choir, because in the polyphonic choir, you need the four voices. So soprano, contralto, tenor, and bass. So the first concern is about, the first problem is an exigence. So you have to find choir boys, unless you have to replace them with the... So it's a completely different sound, but I would say that both are great sounds. So I don't see... a conflict. I see possibilities to work with women and to work with kids.
What do you, I'm sure you're right, is that they make different sounds. There are the practical issues. One of the problems is that the moment you start bringing girls into the music, young boys find it quite difficult, because already there's a feeling that maybe music is a bit effeminate, and the church is a bit effeminate, and it's quite hard. It's been historically and culturally quite difficult for boys to feel confident the moment you begin to change the tradition and have mixed choirs. But as you say, there's a practical question. It's very hard to get boys to sing in choirs nowadays.
Yeah, sure. For example, I'm certainly in favor of preserving the Sistine Chapel as a choir with the kids, and as a male choir, basically. So this is part of the tradition, even though in the past there were not the kids, but there were falsettisti and also, you know, the castrati. And so there were different ensemble in the past. But right now, for a while, Domenico Bartolucci in particular took care of creating a school dedicated to the kids of the Sistine Chapel. So it's part of the history, and we have to preserve this. But at the same time, if there are choir with women, that's okay, that's fine too.
I'm going to ask you about Sacred Voices in detail in a moment, but I don't want to leave the Sistine Chapel yet, just because it's such an interesting thing, and I think people will be interested. Can you just tell us a bit about the history of the Sistine Chapel Choir? It goes back really quite a long way, and there's the wonderful story that of Mozart coming in and hearing Allegri's Miserere and remembering it and going and writing it down, stealing it from the Sistine Chapel. When did the Sistine Chapel begin to have a polyphonic choir?
Yeah, so today we can say that the Sistine Chapel is the oldest choir of the Catholic Church. And if we go back to history, since the beginning of Christianity, as soon as they had the chance to sing publicly, they took care of the choir. So this choir goes back for thousands of years. And it's really the oldest choir of the church. So this means that the popes in particular have always had great care of the liturgy and wanted to be accompanied by a good group of singers. So, and then throughout the centuries, they were specialized first of all in Gregorian chant and then in polyphony. So, you know, then the biggest, the most important author of the polyphony is Pierluigi da Palestrina back in the Renaissance. And since then, as you know, there has been a continuity in the repertoire of this particular choir, which is based in particular on the two pillars of Gregorian chant and sacred polyphony. And as you know, there were some facts, for example, the one that you mentioned about Mozart, etc., because these big composers, when they came and they listened to this choir, were all amazed by the sound and also by the acoustics, because at the time the Sistine Chapel performed specifically in the place of the Sistine Chapel. Now we perform in St. Peter's Basilica, but at the time the liturgies of the Pope were celebrated in that particular place, which is the Sistine Chapel, that we recently saw in the press, especially during the election of the new Pope.
So this is very interesting, and I should have realized that, of course, the acoustics would be different. So just as a matter of technical interest, tell me a little bit. We know about the Sistine Chapel as a place. We know about its beauty. But it had particular acoustics, did it?
Yeah, so when it was built, they took in great consideration the acoustics. And so in the Sistine Chapel, if you imagine the place, there is a small place which is called the Cantoria, which is fine for just a very limited group of people. Right. And from there, it's a kind of a small balcony inside the Sistine Chapel. And when we were kids and we went there, we couldn't even see because it was, there was a fence outside. So it was even impossible to see the liturgies that were taking place in the Sistine Chapel. But the acoustics were fantastic. So this means that the artists involved in the creation of that place were particularly interested to have a good acoustics to make sure that the liturgies were carefully followed and that the music could be heard in the most important and in the best way possible. Now we have microphones in St. Peter's Basilica, but in the Sistine Chapel they didn't. So it had to be really carefully studied to sound and to echo the choir in the best way possible.
I'm horrified to hear you have microphones in St. Peter's. That seems to me to be a sign of terrible decadence. I've always wanted to sing in St. Mark's Venice, and particularly to hear the Monteverdi Vespers there, because again, the acoustics of different places are unique and bring something to the whole ambiance of the music. Justin, let me come to you for a moment and ask you, how did you get involved with Sacred Voices Choir tour in New York?
Well, I actually met Alessandro in New York a few years ago at the Columbus Foundation, which is an Italian club right by Central Park. He was there with some of the musicians, and we got to know each other. And then I had seen some performances of the Sacred Voices Choir. I thought they were just unbelievable for performances. And he told me he had expressed some interest in going on a tour of New York. I run an organization here, Reclaiming Christendom, which is out to promote Catholic and Christian arts in our culture, whether it be music, whether it be novels, films, anything in the humanities. So Alessandro and I immediately started to talk about it, and we saw it was quite possible to do. And might I add, Alessandro still has a very good voice, because when he was visiting me in New York, he broke out in song in the subway, and we were showered with money. So don't let him, his voice is still there, mind you. I'm telling you, this guy is the best I've seen. You know, the longtime New Yorkers were jealous of what this guy could do. But anyway, yeah, so that at that meeting, the idea was born. And since then, Alessandro and I have been working together to plan this. And right now, we're a month away, and I can tell you there's a lot of excitement in New York for Sacred Voices coming to town. We can just feel it in the streets.
I'm going to come back to you and ask you about the relationship between music and the integrity of the Catholic faith. But first of all, Alessandro, what's the repertoire of Sacred Voices? Do you have a particular genre, a particular period, or are you entirely flexible in your musical taste? To what extent do you derive your integrity and your experience from the Sistine Chapel? And to what extent are you simply, like most many choirs, just experimentally voracious in terms of the styles that you pursue?
Yeah, so we don't have a large repertoire, but not because we don't have the chance to expand our repertoire, but because we are focused on the repertoire of the Sistine Chapel Choir.
So basically we
perform Gregorian chant. And together with Gregorian chant, we perform polyphony. Polyphony in the tradition and in the style of the Roman school. So basically, our most important authors are Pierluigi da Palestrina, for sure, the first one, because he's called the Prince of Music for his important role during the Reform, the Council of Trento back in the Renaissance. And then together with Palestrina, we perform the music of the most recent composer of the Sistine Chapel Choir. So Lorenzo Perosi and Domenico Bartolucci, who were both the conductor of this choir in the 20th century. So the first 50 years, 40 years, Lorenzo Perosi, and the second half, Domenico Bartolucci. Then we perform music by Tommaso Ludovico da Vittoria, Morales, but all musicians that were close to the style of the Roman school. So this is our focus. This is what we want to transmit and to spread internationally. And so it's not a large repertoire, but it's full of songs that come from the experience of these priests that were close to the Holy Father and were God inspired them. So we perform music which comes from the beauty of God.
In the choirs that I've sung in, there's a kind of almost a snobbery when it comes to Gregorian chant because it's written in a different script, obviously, but it's so different stylistically from later polyphony that the choirs always divide up into those who've taken special workshops and had special training in the singing of Gregorian chant and the others who just come and look at the notes. But there's a sophistication to the stylistic demands of Gregorian chant that is really quite severe. And I guess you're the world experts, presumably, both the Sistine Chapel and the spin-off, the Sacred Choir, to the Sacred Voices as well.
But, you know, if we look at facts, we have to consider that there are different traditions of singing. So, for example, if we look at Europe, there is not one way to sing Gregorian chant and to sing polyphony. We have the Roman tradition, we have the English tradition, we have other traditions. So our tradition comes back and is passed down from one generation to another of singers and of singers of that choir of the Sistine Chapel. So Domenico Bartolucci took great care to preserve what he himself inherited from the past. So we want to adhere and to spread this way of singing. And I can certainly say that all the people that listen to our concerts are amazed because they feel the noble style of the Roman school. And in particular, this year, we also had the privilege to record the official Vatican CD in honor of Palestrina because we are celebrating the fifth centenary from its birth. So we recorded the Missa Pape Marcelli. And this will be part of the repertoire that we will sing in New York. So I'm sure that people will be thrilled and amazed from the style and the our personal style, which is inherited from the past, and we want to spread and preserve for the future generations.
And people will want to can buy that CD now if they want to. They can presumably get hold of it as a CD to buy and collect and listen to, as well as
The Vatican issued a special stamp this year in honor of Palestrina, as they did for Perosi and for Bartolucci on the occasion of the first centenary from its birth. So this year is the fifth centenary of the birth of Palestrina. So the Vatican wanted to highlight this anniversary because, as we said before, Palestrina is the most important composer of polyphony. And we had the great privilege to record the official CD with the Missa Pape Marcelli and some other motets from Palestrina. So it was a particular project, and we were honored to present to Pope Leo this CD and to offer to him the performance of the Missa Pape Marcelli just a few days ago in the Sala Regia of the Apostolic Palace. So we were the first choir to perform in front of the Holy Father. And it was a great miracle that God wanted to offer us. And so we are really thankful to the Holy Father for coming and for also sharing a few words at the end of the concert with us and, you know, saying thanks to our mission and praising the role of the polyphony in the liturgy. So it was really a great experience.
That sounds fantastic. Justin, I'm going to come back to Reclaiming Christendom in a moment, but I want to ask you about the tour itself and the churches you're going to. But before I do, do you have any thoughts, any reflections on the integrity of music and the way in which it plays a part in defining Christendom and acting as a spiritual resource as well as a piece of artistic excellence?
Well, I think any Christian, when they think back at their faith, music is a huge part of their memories, their soul. For me, especially Gregorian chant, has always been very important in my life, and choirs as well. I spent a lot of time in England, and I have to say the Anglicans as well do pretty well on their choirs. I was always impressed over there as well, and in Rome. And I've always noticed that one common thing that brings Christians together, all Christians together, is music. Regardless of denomination, regardless of anything, is the music. So I think music is a key component in the walk of a Christian's life. And the idea of bringing a choir at the level of Sacred Voices here to New York, because I've noticed a lot of the excitement has been through Christians, but even non-Christians as well have been asking me about this choir coming. Sacred Voices is coming. Sacred Voices is coming. And it which really showed me how important music is, not only to Christians, but to people of other faiths. So I think the ultimate thing that music does in the Christian faith is both bring groups together, people together, but also our personal journey as well.
So. Which of the churches that are hosting Sacred Voices in the coming tour?
Well, that was quite an experience because we have hundreds and hundreds of churches here in New York, and we had to whittle it down to six, which was not very easy. So I had to go and visit various churches. Obviously, the number one thing was, is it large enough? How is the organ? Because we have the organist of the Pope coming here to New York, Joseph Cole. So the first thing was, do we have a good organ? What is the size and the acoustics of the church? But then there were other factors considering how far apart we wanted to spread the concerts out. So we have both Long Island, Manhattan, and Westchester County, which is right north of there. So all of them have large Christian Catholic populations. But so we had to spread them out. And then, of course, there's the element of the church has to be amenable. You have to have a staff that wants to work with you. There has to be enthusiasm with the team. You need to find, because a lot of churches wanted to work with us, but we didn't find everything clicked. So ultimately, we found six churches, two on Long Island, two in Manhattan, and two in Westchester. All of them have been fantastic, and all of them are almost sold out already. So we ultimately found a very, very good team to work with. And the congregations in the surrounding areas are very excited about it.
We have an audience throughout the world, but many in America and certainly in New York. So we'll put a link to that so people can discover dates and places. Two more questions, Alexander, before we finish. What are the challenges of going to on tour and finding yourself in a church with a completely new acoustic? I mean, Justin's talked about the fact that you need a helpful staff and you need a good organ, but the acoustics are really very different, and actually it's quite a challenge for a choir to adapt to where it is, because again, the way it sounds to the singers is not always the way it's heard in another part of the building. How do you find that as a challenge when you're going on tour?
Yeah, so I don't say that this is a particular challenge. Basically, Justin did a great job in selecting these churches, and then I had the chance to visit New York a couple of times. So we went together to see the places, and I had one of my collaborators with me, and so we did some rehearsals, and we made sure that the organ is okay. So, you know, the churches generally are built in a great way. So architects and people know their stuff, and so I don't see any particular trouble in the change of place. So certainly coming to going to New York with 40 people and some people from the staff, it's not easy because there are some issues to work with. But there has been a lot of preparation, and Justin is responsible of a great team. So I totally. I don't have any issue from my side, so I'm totally relying on what they are doing. And so after a couple of visits together, I think everything is okay. But certainly August may be a little bit hot, but we are really excited. So rather than seeing problems, I see a great excitement in the singers and in myself. And we were in Chicago a couple of years ago, so it's not the first time that we are involved in international tour. So basically we sing in Italy in the most important cathedrals, but having the chance to do this international tour, it's during the Jubilee, because don't forget that this year is the Jubilee here, Pilgrims of Hope. So we want to be pilgrim, and we want to unite Rome and New York in a common praise to the Lord, which goes through sacred music and the beauty of sacred music.
Justin was tactless enough to mention the Anglicans. And over here, that's kind of a hot potato because Anglican choirs in St. Paul's and Westminster Abbey are superb. One of the things that's happened over the last two decades is that the Catholics in Westminster Cathedral have at least got as professionally well regarded, and some people think, depending upon the musical director, overtaken them. But it's a different, as you say, it can be a different style. It can be an English style. So I have to ask, when are you coming to London to show the people of London quite what the authentic Vatican sound, the Roman sound, sounds like?
No, I hope to receive an invitation quite soon. Also, if this conversation can bear fruits, I would be very happy. Well, so, you know, and if you don't mind, I would like also to have the chance to say a few words on a particular project that we are promoting with the Cardinal Bartolucci Foundation, because Cardinal Bartolucci was a great composer, and in his production, in his legacy, we also have a great opera lyrica, a lyric opera, which is called Brunellesco, and Cardinal Bartolucci came from Florence, so he was passionate about the Renaissance, and he composed this opera in homage and in honor of the architect who realized the marvelous dome above the Cathedral of Santa Maria del Fiore. So the opera has never been performed. So the chance that we have to go to the US is also to promote this project, because we want to organize a great world premiere in Florence with this opera and then export it abroad and possibly in the theaters across the world, also to expand and to make the name of the Cardinal much known than it is now.
That sounds immensely exciting. So thank you. So Alessandro Bicciocci and Justin, thank you very, very much indeed. It's exciting. Justin, I'm going to come back to you to ask you questions about Reclaiming Christendom later on, but this sounds a fantastic concert and a wonderful opportunity, and we're very glad to do what we can to make it better known, and particularly to start the whole process of making sure you get an invitation to London so that we can hear you ourselves live. Thank you both very much indeed.
Thank you.